How did we get on that topic?
I don't know how we get on any topic.
Okay, so hot ones. Oh, Stephen Colbert. You like the guy?
Sure. No? Wait, should we introduce
oh,
the
right.
show?
Oh, right. Hi. Go ahead.
I am Doug Friedman.
I am Kenzie Jeunesse.
And this is Your Mental Breakdown.
The podcast.
Which, believe it or not, is a therapy podcast with two licensed therapists.
Well, I'm registered associate. You're licensed. So I'm allowed to be a little less professional. Them's the rules. Uh-oh.
All right. Well, bring on your unprofessionalism.
Yeah. So, okay. We were talking about Stephen Colbert, who you must love. No?
I like Stephen Colbert.
Are you good to him?
We were talking about Stephen Wright.
Oh, you're right.
I am right.
Uh-huh. Yeah, with the W. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So Stephen Colbert was Hot Ones. Do you watch Hot Ones?
I have seen Hot Ones, yes.
Okay. Can we, I'm pitching this idea to you on the air. Let's do Hot Ones.
Wait. What do you mean? What do you mean?
Hey.
Wait, what do you mean?
Hey.
What do you mean?
Is that a me impression? Is that an impression of me?
Oh my gosh. Really?
Is it?
No.
No?
It's Jennifer Lawrence on Hot Ones flipping out.
Wait, really?
Yes.
Was that a thing?
Yes.
Wait, I watched her. She was flipping out?
She was going, wait, what do you mean? What do you mean? Wait, what do you mean?
Oh, I don't even remember this.
Oh, yeah, that became a huge meme, too.
Oh, well, I don't know memes.
Wow, you just got schooled on Hot Ones were schooling me.
I'm going to school you back now because I want to do it. Let's do it. It can be fun. We could get some, like, gluten-free wings or whatever you're into. I can get some vegan ones. Let's do it.
We could get some tofu for you with some hot sauce.
That's what we did. Me and my friends went to a brewery and we did the Hot Ones Challenge. I did Da Bomb. I felt like I could conquer the world after doing that.
Wow.
Because it was horrendous.
Did you really go 1 through 10?
Yeah. Well, no. You picked 5 or 6, I think, out of the lot. And then, you know, of course, I wanted to challenge myself. We all did Da Bomb and The Last Dab, like the really hot one.
Wow.
Like number 10. Because, you know, if you're going to do it, you got to go
all in. You
might
as well
in.
Do it.
Yeah, you might as well ruin your taste buds.
I will say that I have increased my tolerance for spicy. It's been a journey. There was a time, I think maybe even a year ago, when I wasn't really eating spicy food. Mm-hmm. And my friend Zoe was like, let's get Thai food. Let's do this. Let's have Indian. And great.
Oh,
and Indian and Thai are fantastic with spice.
Right.
And I took like one bite and would like over-exaggerate. Well, maybe not over-exaggerate. I would say I very appropriately would take a thing of coconut milk and just stick my tongue in it because it was burning.
Oh, wow.
You know, like hold your mouth under the faucet and just turn it on.
You sound like my dad because my dad is the same. He actually can't handle even mild spice. So you're really making me want to do this even more, Doug.
You just want to torture me.
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
It could be so fun.
Wait a second. Hang on. Time out. Was this all brought on by the new spicy ginger tea that we're drinking?
Brought to you by our new spicy ginger tea. Not a sponsor.
No.
No, but Doug did spike our tea today with, okay, that's not too bad, with fennel.
Fennel.
That's star.
Anise.
Anise.
Uh-huh.
It's lovely.
It is lovely.
And
a lot of
death,
ginger from the farmer's market, which is very strong.
Because we fancy over here. We are fancy. Did we have a listener question or no?
We did.
We have.
Yes.
But do we want to answer it today, right now?
We'll see what happens.
Okay.
It was interesting. And maybe this will be like what you were saying before. Like, what about our questions? What about get to know us? I will ask you.
We could do it over Hot Ones.
Oh, gosh.
Doug, it could be perfect. Oh, my God.
All right.
Please, if I have to be on a podcast, you got to let me do Hot Ones.
I'm not saying no.
Oh, my God. Okay. I'm so excited.
I'm also not saying yes. Here
we
go.
I'll prepare them. Okay.
And this was I don't know. I'm just going to read what it is.
Okay.
Do you have to be, quote, normal to become a therapist? Like, do you have to have all your problems figured out first? And then I was talking about this actually with a client who was interested in becoming a therapist. And his wife was like, you can't be a therapist. You're in therapy. I'm like, Therapists go to therapy.
Yeah, like, that's probably a common misconception. Right.
And he was kind of asking, like, wait, would I have to give up the other stuff that I'm doing? Like, if I'm writing and I'm playing music, do I have to give that up? No. Or can I be a therapist and still do that? Right? So all of these questions are the question to you, Kenzie. Take it away.
To me? I mean, Doug, I think we agree. If we were to say, you have to be normal, obviously that's in quotes.
That was actually in quotes.
Exactly. Yes. So, like, have all your shit figured out to be a therapist, we would be hypocrites. Because who has all their stuff figured out? I mean, what does figured out even mean? I think it's an ongoing process. And thus, we're all human all the time. And there's just absolutely no way that therapists are not perfect human beings.
No.
Right? Because you can't be a perfect human being. What does that even mean? So that's my very simple answer. Like, absolutely not. You are a person first, a therapist maybe second. It is hard, I will admit, like, to be a therapist and not have your identity get confounded with everything. Yeah. It's a unique job for sure, and it changes your life and your outlook and your worldview. However, of course there's time, hopefully. I mean, I'm an associate, so I've heard horror stories about having to overwork yourself and not have time for other things. But generally speaking, eventually in this career, you can do it part-time. You can do one session a week if that's what you want to do. I mean, literally, whatever works for you.
Yeah.
It's a flexible job.
It is. It can be, for sure. And I will say, too, that there's something about this where the comment I've heard a lot, I think we've talked about this before too, when people say, oh, don't psychoanalyze me, or stop thinking about
stop
me like
my mind.
Right. Stop being a therapist.
Dude. Well,
I'm not like this because I'm a therapist. I'm a therapist because I'm like this.
Mm.
Right. I was drawn to this because I think this way, and I'm interested in how human beings think and why our brains are shaped certain ways and how we can reshape them and do this. And that's interesting.
It is the chicken or the egg thing, though, huh? Because I think it's both. I mean, I feel that it's both. I've changed a lot since becoming a therapist.
Right.
And I was always interested in psychology, but I didn't really know what that meant or what that would turn out to be.
Right.
And would evolve into.
I mean, I never wanted to be a therapist. My mom was a therapist, and I swore I would never do it.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And it was interesting because I think seeing some of my route and what happened with me as a kid and how my mom responded. And then my mom became a therapist after having a career in photography.
Mm.
And she became a therapist.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? So I saw how you could just follow what interests you and move towards that.
That's cool to have that example that, like, oh, you can switch careers too. I think that's a big part of this too, is people often become therapists after another career.
Right.
Or maybe they're thinking about it and they're like, oh, but if I didn't always want to do it, or if I'm not that type of person, or if I've been in therapy, like, surely I can't be a good therapist.
Well,
that's not true.
That's not true. And there are some therapists that go to school to figure out their stuff, to kind of look at things and understand why they're this way or why their family's this way. That's not why I went to school.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not necessarily the route you have to take. That is the route some people take. And I think for some therapists, that shows, because it's still very much about them, right?
Mm, oh, I see. Yeah, yeah. When it kind of goes sometimes the unethical path, or even just like the narcissistic tendencies that some therapists have to, get their own needs met through this job. Sure.
Right.
But, you know, I didn't know I wanted to be a therapist. I mean, I did and I didn't. Like, in high school, I had a therapist and I was like, I want to be just like her. But then I went to school for psychology and I actually liked the science part of it more. And I was like, ooh, what could I do? But I was like, I'm not smart enough to be a scientist. So I was just like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And then I took some time off and did the TV thing. And I was like, I need to get back. I want to help people. Like, I need to do something fulfilling. And then, and then master's. So, like, there's so many different routes.
It's also something amazing that you can go into at like a second stage of your life. I know
A
lot of people who go into therapy as a career after, for example, they've had kids.
Right.
And their kids are a little older. So they're maybe late 40s or 50s. And they're going, I think I'll become a therapist. That sounds cool. I'll do that.
Yeah. It's flexible. I can work from home. I can set my schedule.
Very much. And it's interesting, right? It's an interesting job. I love what we do. I think it's amazing.
And it's the most unique, challenging endeavor ever. In a good way. I mean, it is really enriching, but you also have to be, and Doug, you have to be committed and I think ready to really rip yourself open a little bit because
you only have to be committed if you have very, very severe mental health issues.
Oh my God. I knew you were going to somehow find a way to like be sarcastic about you. Yeah. To make a joke about that. Like if you're too mentally ill, don't step foot in our territory over here.
What? No.
He would never seriously say that. You can, no, I'm not even going down that path.
What path are you going down?
Be yourself. Be yourself.
Oh, man. Right? Be yourself. Everyone else is taken.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's true.
You know who's not taken?
Who? Sarah?
Yeah.
Sarah's taken.
Oh, yeah.
But she's also like an independent woman, you know?
Ooh.
Miss Independent.
Very apropos.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well done.
Thank you.
Although nobody knows what you're talking about yet.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to have to listen to the session.
You do to see what we're talking about.
But before they do that, you know what they can do?
They should check us out.
They should check us out. They should rate us and review us.
Oh, right.
That's how we grow. And it's all about our growth.
Oh, my God. You sound like such a capitalist.
Wait, hang on. Let me put on my glasses. I think I do see a growth.
On my face right here. It's happening. I love being 30.
Oh.
You get wrinkles coming in and acne. It's really fun.
Are you having a mental breakdown?
A little bit.
Oh.
Well, no, I'm okay.
Why don't you guys find us on the socials at your mental breakdown?
Yeah. Your dot mental dot.
Dot dot. And we will
be back
after this.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
So I told you I was taking the kids to Mexico for the weekend, right? I do feel like it was a really nice experience to have with them. It was very different, and it was a really wonderful trip.
Good. And boyfriend, not there. How was that for you?
That was interesting. It's been a while. I used to take the kids there all the time alone, but it's been so many years that I started out the trip quite anxious. It was good. It reminded me that I'm me, that I am a very capable woman, mother. It was sad that he wasn't there and I didn't like it for that reason, but I realized I didn't need him to be there. In my mind, I know I don't need him, but because he's just always been around for so many years now, it was kind of like, oh my God, boyfriend is not going to be there. Okay, what if something goes wrong? Like I was going through all the things that I probably wouldn't have even thought of had he been part of the trip. But obviously we were good. We were fine. We had a great time. It was a bummer he wasn't there because that was a really fun experience, a first time experience that we would have had with the kids together. But it was also meaningful that I got to have it with the kids, just the three of us.
Yeah. And for you, I mean, kind of what you're describing is having your own sense of agency and, you know, being very capable and reminding yourself of that. And it doesn't mean that you're not able to do that when you're with somebody. It just means they share the load.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not like, oh, now that I'm back from Mexico, I don't need boyfriend for this. I'm going to do it all myself. It's not that.
And I think that's actually really important. I've always been in long-term relationships or marriages where for 2 years, the 2 years I was single, I spent that time rediscovering who I was. I never changed. I was still the exact same person. I just forgot that.
Sure.
I forgot that I was that person. And I slowly start to shrink back into the background. Then the nice thing about this current relationship, which I feel like is my adult relationship, is that I spent so long, I call it getting to know myself, where it was just me and my kids. In the sense there was no other person for me to rely on. And so I had to learn to rely on myself. So once I got together with boyfriend, it was just a much more healthy relationship overall. Because I knew I wanted him around, but I knew I didn't need him around. So this was just another element of that.
Yeah, it's been a minute. It's also almost highlights how healing the relationship with boyfriend is.
Yeah.
You've come from relationships, not all of them, but some that have been, well, it's not a stretch to say abusive.
Yeah.
But the relationships that you've been in have not really lent themselves to you having agency and a yes. sense of yourself individually. I am capable and I have a relationship where it is equitable. Like
yeah.
we do really support each other and I can be an individual and be in this relationship. It's not that black or white. I'm fully dependent or codependent. We're interdependent.
When you're saying all this stuff, I'm hearing your mom's voice when she describes how my individuality or my independence was so completely taken away from me as a child that I have to set myself apart with something, whether it's taking care of people or, you know, trying to protect people or trying to fix everything. But the part that really stands out to me is me sort of sliding back into that. It's an abusive, but it's also a safe place where I don't have individuality, where it's not on me to make all the decisions and run the show. Somebody else is doing that. I just kind of second guess myself for a minute, and then I have to go back to the place like, obviously, I can handle this. I know how to drive. I know how to take care of my children. Yeah, it's just one of those things where I just sort of start to slip. Maybe, and I'm going to throw this out there with a giant question mark. Maybe.
Sure.
It relates to what your mom was saying. I felt like it did because when I was listening to how she said that, you've said it to me too, but the wording she used was so exact and precise. Mm. I wish I remembered her verbatim. It was like, when you've had your identity completely stripped away from you, those, right. I think, were close to her words. That was really powerful to me. And it sort of started to make all these bubbles to different parts of my life.
I think that is something for us to kind of dig out a little bit and recognize and honor in a way, because something wonderful has come out of that, and it was really difficult. We'll put a pin in the idea of slipping back into something. So we'll get there in a second. With that idea of, and I think she used words like, when they strip you of your individuality.
Individuality, that was the word.
Right. And they remove any sense of agency in your own life.
Yes.
Right?
That's it.
So that your life is theirs.
Yes.
In a sense, they own you. Right? And they can then send you out to the grocery store knowing you will buy exactly what they wanted you to get, exactly the way you were supposed to get it.
Yep. Exactly. You know,
and you're conditioned that way. Otherwise, you will get beaten. So you're conditioned that way and you're not rewarded or appreciated. It's just the lack of punishment is how you know you did a good job. That's horrible, but that's the conditioning that you kind of went through. It's almost the fear of being ignorant about who you are.
Yes.
Because when you were in the cult, they wanted you to be ignorant to who you are. Mm-hmm. In fact, they didn't want you to be who you are. It's who they told you to be, right? So it becomes scary that you don't know who you are.
Yes.
And it becomes scary to be who you are. So mm-hmm. we don't do that.
Yeah.
And I think you're wanting data so much when you got out of the cult and wanting it is to kind of figure out who you are and who you are in the world and how you want to be in the world and really mm-hmm. figuring that out for yourself.
Yeah.
And that's wonderful. You did a wonderful, wonderful job. Yeah. Really. And you have a very strong sense of self. I think, and here's the pin, sometimes it's nice to not have so much agency and individuality where you don't have that responsibility. You can just let someone else drive. It's not even hitting cruise control and still having your hands on the wheel. It's just sitting in the passenger seat, sitting in the back seat, kicking back at the pool without watching all the kids, and just kind of going, ah, someone else has it.
It's so funny you use that example of the cruise control, dude. It's so funny. So here, I'm going to paint you a little picture here, Doug. I am a very good driver, but I'm also 100% uneasy. There's never a moment where I relax my shoulders or anything in my body if someone else is driving my car. Okay. So on the way back from Ensenadas, okay, my sister, she jumped in to help me drive. It's so funny. So I'm sitting there just so nervous and anxious about the fact that sister's driving my car. She's sitting there gripping the wheel so tightly that she's actually making the car go like do-do-do-do, like back and forth, back and forth. So I keep trying to tell her, you can put cruise control on. My car will also keep you in the lanes. It's one of those where it has like lane assist and it will bump you back. It's not quite a Tesla, but it's a nice car. And I'm like, you can just sit back, hold that wheel, put your cruise control on and just chill. But I don't think she took a breath once. And I think it was because of me. I think that she felt me because I was talking like, oh, just relax, just, you know, hoping she would relax, which would make me relax. But I think because she felt me so anxious, she then couldn't relax. Like it was just this weird vicious cycle the whole trip. It was just interesting how you said that, because I have such issues with that, with letting go and thinking, okay, this is a grown-ass adult who drives their own car, who's driven cars all over the world. There is no reason for me to distrust her driving my almost self-driving car home. Like there was no reason. And yet I had so much anxiety about it. And I think I'm assuming here, the reason she had so much anxiety was because she could feel me.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. And it's in part, then you're aware of her response and her experience of anxiety. So you're trying to do something about that. It's also, you've talked about this in terms of how you are on an airplane, right? Because you're not going to jump in the cockpit and fly.
No.
And it's not your plane. So you give up control entirely. Maybe part of this is when it is black or white, either I have control entirely or I don't have it at all.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. But that in between of someone is driving my car, how do I manage that? How do I give up some control? It's sort of like right now, if the kids and boyfriend are cleaning the house, how do I let them clean the house their way versus tell them how to clean?
You just hit it. So that's where I think I'm still holding on to my anxiety surrounding elements of exactly what you just said. So it's not, I don't have any control whatsoever. I don't know how to fly a plane, so there's nothing I can do. Or I am in complete control. The elements in between are exactly what you said. I know how to drive. Why isn't she driving how I would drive? Why isn't she putting on the cruise control? Why isn't she relaxing and chilling out while she's driving? Or why isn't, you know, boyfriend and the kids cleaning the kitchen the way that I would do it?
Right.
These are things I need to learn how to exhale. And like you said, allow them to do it their way.
When that's happening, what is it that you're feeling? When sister is driving your car, what were you feeling?
I'm feeling like, this is going to make me sound horrible, but like
great,
she's doing it wrong. Like she's making the wrong lane choices or the wrong speed choices. Okay. Or
and when you're thinking she's making the wrong choices, how does it feel for you?
Super.
What's the actual feeling?
Frustrated, anxious.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. That's what we're leaning into.
I'm sure she didn't do anything wrong. Doesn't matter.
Your experience is I'm frustrated and anxious.
Is that because she's not doing it the way I would do it? Or is that just because I'm not the one driving?
Well, both are true.
Okay.
Meaning I'm anxious essentially because I don't have control.
Okay.
When I'm driving, I have control. Mm-hmm. Sort of. So can't control the conditions of the road, can't control other drivers.
Yeah.
But we have some sense of control. If someone is driving the way I drive, then I have an illusion of that sense of control.
Okay. Yeah.
Right? But either way, it's settling the anxiety that I get when I don't have control.
Okay.
Right? Mm-hmm. And you remember my big line that's on the t-shirt, right?
Yeah.
Relax.
Nothing.
Nothing's under control. And it's recognizing the second part first. Nothing's under control. Right. I don't control the road. I do my best.
This is why I've gone through so many cleaning ladies. I swear.
Well, yeah.
I like, why did you do it like that? Why? That makes no sense. Like, I don't know. It's crazy. And I mean, they're professional cleaning people. That's what they do for a living. Who says I know better? They just didn't do it my way.
You do.
I say that I know better, but it's not necessarily so.
Pause right there. There's two things we're going to hit in the next 5 minutes. The first thing, and these do go in order, is that I feel anxious. We need to start acknowledging that. If sister is driving and you just said, oh, this is so weird not being the one driving my own car. I feel so anxious. How do you think that would go?
I actually did say that a couple of times and then followed up by a thank you so much for driving. And I apologize for being an annoying backseat driver. And she sort of waved me off. And then I would do it again. And it was almost like I was doing it for me. To let me know that I was giving control of the car to her, but it just didn't totally work.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
I tried.
I love it. You didn't try. You did. That is what you did. And that's beautiful. That's the number one. Is wow, I'm totally anxious right now. I'm feeling anxiety. I can feel a little frustration because I don't have control. God, this is so hard for me. Saying that and acknowledging that is the number one. Okay. Just trying to be okay with it? No.
Okay, so at least I made a positive step, even though it didn't have the
absolutely
life-changing results I had hoped for.
Well, and you know, remember me saying this to you before when you're like, maybe it's just a fluke. I don't care.
Yeah.
It's still carving a new neural pathway for you.
Yes, this is true.
Is it a life-changing experience? Yes, it actually is. You don't realize it yet and you don't see it yet, but we're laying that groundwork and it's fantastic.
That's fair.
So give yourself that pat on the back because you were doing that. Really, you were.
Yeah.
You weren't just trying, you were doing.
I was doing. I feel it was a selfish, you know, I was doing it for a reason that I hoped would soothe me.
Yes, yes, that is selfish. And that's okay.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, I was doing that selfishly. I was thinking of myself. I put the oxygen mask on me. I felt anxious, so I said I was anxious. Great, great. The second part, you know, that whatever that might be, they're not going to do it as well as I would. And that's in part the good enough.
Right. And accepting that my way isn't necessarily the better way or the right way. No, I need to make peace or find a place to accept that in myself.
Yeah. You said, who's to say my way is the best? You know, they're exactly professionals. They clean for a living. Who's to say my way is the best? Your way is the best for you right now because it gives you control.
Okay.
their way might be best for you at some point because you don't have to have control.
That's the point we're going to get to, Doug.
I mean, I have countless friends, clients, colleagues who tell me about, yeah, after the cleaners leave, I have to put things back, you know, and I'm like, I don't know where this went or they broke this or this happened. Like, okay, would you rather be scrubbing your toilets? No. Okay. And it's a bummer that broke or you don't know where this is, you know, all that stuff. What we hopefully also experience is I didn't have to do this. I didn't have to have control. I allowed this to happen and this happened.
Yes, that's the part I need to look at.
Right. So again, step one is acknowledging our anxiety and our frustration and that's there. And then we can kind of lean into, and they're not going to do it the way that I would. I don't have control. This is not under control.
And I didn't have to do that.
And I didn't have to do that.
And I didn't have to drive all the way back home alone.
There we go.
Like the first time. So there was anxiety on both sides, which is, that's perfect. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. And like you said, I didn't have to scrub the toilets.
Yeah. Yeah. It starts with acknowledging the initial anxiety.
Okay.
Then we can lean into, you know, it's a version of, if you remember the what if game, naming all the negatives. Okay. Mm-hmm. Name all the positives. I mean, there's a cool exercise where if you right now, and we'll do like an abbreviated 60-second version of this right now. But if right now, just, I want you to think of what's wrong with this picture and look around just your immediate surroundings. Whether it's looking at your leg, looking at the walls, look at three things. Just find three things that are wrong, that are not good.
My sister moved the bench away from the table, so that's driving me nuts. My computer screens from work are behind me, so my flower pot, I had to move it off the table, also driving me nuts. And then I have this robot vacuum, and I can't turn it on there's cords around it. Three things.
Gotcha. Done. Gotcha. So note how that felt to look around and see the things that are wrong. You know, that's probably more like your regular state of being. Now I want you to do something similar, but I want you to put in your head three things that are just amazing.
I have a robot vacuum, which I have wanted to have forever since I knew it was a thing. I have two giant screens that I can use when I work from home, which most people don't. And I have actually a really beautiful dining room table that my sister found on like OfferUp or something.
Wow. How does that feel? Does that feel different than when you looked at the things and looked at, right? Does it feel different though?
Yes, absolutely.
It's wild because we often look, especially when we've grown up with that critical voice in our head, which you have.
Yes.
And it wasn't just internal, it was external for you as well.
Yes.
We see things that way and we have that experience when we look around our surroundings all the time. Having that though is what allows you to kind of balance that and go, wow, I didn't have to drive the whole way home from Mexico. It was great. So we're getting there. Wow, I didn't have to scrub toilets. That's awesome.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I love that.
Cool.
Thank you, Doug.
And we're back.
We're back with Miss Independent. I had to do it again. Okay, but we're finally talking, maybe not finally, but it's been a while since we've brought, you know, Sarah's boyfriend into the mix, right?
Yeah.
Boyfriend, right? Not husband.
Correct.
But new partner. But he's been here for a while.
He's been here for a while. It's not new. It's partner.
Not new. Partner established. Yeah.
Although he didn't come along for the Mexico trip.
He did not. Because Sarah is an independent woman who don't need no man. Okay, I'm joking. And this is just being a little playful here. But she is realizing, I think, hey, look, I can do things on my own.
Totally. Totally.
Which we love to see because I think we talk about that codependent versus independent.
Yep.
We do this with Sarah and Drew, but with Sarah, it's very tied to the agency that was stripped of her in the cult, right? So now And I love the way you say this too. You were like, it's abusive, yes, and it's a safe place, not having agency, right? Not good, and it's a safe place. Like, you did a wonderful job protecting yourself and functioning in this cruel world, right?
Right.
So I really like the way that you go into that. And I think she has made sense of that for the most part, or at least she's definitely gained some insight there into, like, why, you know, her past relationships were so quote-unquote toxic or unhealthy, right? Because they were kind of just reenacting patterns of, you know, cult behavior.
Yeah.
There's a quote that I think you said regarding the cult, being ignorant to who you are. And I don't know why, it just really was one of those things that kind of sent shivers down my spine. So I was like, ooh, that is a terrifying thought.
Right.
I forget how Sarah responds exactly to that, but I think she obviously is very, like, resonating with this whole thing of, like, yeah, it feels right. It feels comfortable to not have agency. And at the same time, it's being forced out of her. I mean, not forced, but, you know, she needs it. She's a person.
Well, that's part of why I think a lot of people are drawn in and stay in cults, because they don't have to think for themselves. And that is a relief.
Yeah, totally. Right?
It's the cruise control that we were talking about.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I learned this as a kid because my mom worked with people coming out of cults.
Right.
And I saw that. And this is what, you know, my mom was on the episode breaking it down.
She has
and
so much Sarah, to say about this.
Oh, yeah. It was great. I love that.
You know? And Sarah loved it, too. I mean, that was huge for her to hear.
She brought that back up. Mm-hmm. And for her to, like, hear that from an expert in that was, wow.
Right. Yeah.
Totally. And what I think resonated when my mom said it, that idea of a cult strips you of your identity.
Yeah.
So you don't have one. You have no agency. God. You are not an individual at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's something that she is now reclaiming and now experiencing. Mm-hmm. And yet, and it's something I put a pin in at one point saying, we slip into that, right? Mm-hmm. And then revisited by saying, what we're putting a pin in and that idea of slipping back into something is what you just said, Kenzie, that idea of it's comfortable.
Yeah.
It's automatic. It's automatic, right? Yeah. You don't have to think.
Yeah.
You don't have to think for yourself.
Right now it's automatic, right? Like, I think this is something we talk about with clients a lot, like right now, and you do too with the ski trail metaphor, right? Like in CBT or just in therapy in general, like what we're working towards is literally rewiring your brain. Like right now your brain is wired to feel comfortable not having agency or freaking out when you don't have control, right? Like,
well, and I'll go deeper on that. Yeah, it's not even to feel comfortable. It's to not feel, period.
Sure.
It's to be comfortable and not question things.
To just suppress, right.
And what she started doing as a teenager and why she left the cult is she began to question things.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that there.
Mm-hmm.
So she probably went the route of intellectualizing and collecting data because I am thinking for myself
right
now. And what I was pressing at and poking at is,
how do you feel?
Yeah,
right? Like what's actually underneath all of that? Because we know that we can intellectualize this all day and question it. And why are people like this? And why did they do that? How do they sleep at night? Right? Like she's very good at collecting all that data. And at this point, it's like she knows how effed up that all was, right? Like she gets it. She feels it. And so you're like, okay, Sarah, like the challenge, the push is what is underneath that judgment, that disgust, those like surface feelings of anger and resentment and just like judgment, like questioning it all. And I think what you eventually get with a beautiful story of her and her sister, right?
Driving back from Mexico.
Without control, there's anxiety, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and what was really cool is it was a way to highlight for her that idea of giving up control objectively. She was seeing it in her sister, right?
Right.
It wasn't her.
Yeah. Yeah. It was outside of herself. But they were both feeling it and feeding off each other a little bit.
Oh, totally. Totally.
But this story, for some reason, I remember when I first listened to this session and it stood out to me so much. And it seems like such a not simple story, but it's like, here's a time like a story. You know, I was anxious with my sister and this is what happened. And the solution that you come to or some sort of answer, right, is like, or this idea, right, is we need to acknowledge how we're feeling.
Right.
And even me, I first listened to this session, I'm still thinking to myself, whoa, what a concept, like to just acknowledge to yourself how you're feeling and to even maybe go a step further and say it out loud and right. acknowledge to others too, or admit to others too, what you're feeling.
Right.
Like, I don't right. know why. And it sounds even silly admitting that right now, but this was a huge story that stuck with me for some reason, just because, like, what a concept, being vulnerable and admitting how you feel. Like, yeah. that's something I don't typically do in, like, friendships or relationships either. You just kind of, the control takes over yourself too. You're like, I'm going to control myself and not feel my feelings or not acknowledge them.
Totally. Even the idea of being a therapist and helping people understand their feelings, mm-hmm. it's easier said than done.
Yes.
Right?
Right. Because I was going to ask you, like, okay, she's acknowledging her feelings. Like, yes, I do feel anxious without this control. Like, someone else is driving my car. Do I say it to somebody else? Or right. do I just keep that to myself and I acknowledge it to myself, but not to others, right?
And what most people do in that instance mm-hmm. is go either, what can I do about it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or why is it like this?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And we go quickly to those answers and we don't give space and time to the feelings themselves.
To just opening ourselves right. up to
and
the feeling.
Everybody thinks, oh, if I open up to those feelings, then I'm going to have to stay there in those feelings. And that's mm-hmm. so uncomfortable.
Yep.
It's uncomfortable because yeah. you never go there. If you go there,
right.
you don't have to stay there.
No.
You just go there and you go, oh, wow, yeah, I'm yeah. really anxious. Oh, my God, yeah, I can feel my heart. Oh, my right. God, my palms are sweaty.
Right, and when you actually do that, yeah. oh, my God, when you actually do that, you realize, oh, these are temporary or just short-lived feelings that just come and go through us, right? They're always changing. It's not opening the floodgates, right? I mean, I don't know, maybe it is. Maybe you need to cry, but even then, you're not going to be crying forever. Like, it's something that's moving through you, and it's okay to just open up to them in that moment. It's actually really freeing to do that.
Yeah, and I think chances are why you cry when you open that up mm-hmm. is because you're going back to every time you felt that feeling before
sure.
and where that came from and what
sure.
that meant. And
thoughts, right? feelings, behaviors, right?
Right. If we can learn and process having the feelings, period, mm-hmm. then we get more familiar with what it's like to feel.
Right. Oh, I felt this before.
Right.
How was it last time I felt this? Did right. I make it through?
Right. Well, you've heard me say that, right? And even if you don't connect to, mm-hmm. I felt this before, just going, I feel this now.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. What is this like? This is what this is like. As soon as we go, mm-hmm. Have I felt this before? Yes. And it was here. And this wasn't okay. That's when it starts mm-hmm. ramping up.
Trying to figure it out.
Right. And yeah, that's yeah, yeah. where intellectualizing can mm-hmm. work and very much not work for us. Mm-hmm. Because this is where we strengthen these neural pathways.
Right.
Right.
So do you think it is then for an anxious person or someone experiencing anxiety, is it always necessary to understand why the anxiety is there? Right. Because I hear a lot of, you know, even my clients who have anxiety, they're like, I need to know why. Why is this here? Right. Like, I just need to understand. And on a bigger level, it's like, yeah, we want what?
Well, that's okay. So I don't know if you heard it because you just said it, but
oh God,
listen,
what?
No. Listen to it and see if you catch it. Mm. Oh my God, I was getting so anxious. I need mm-hmm. to know why I was anxious. Why is this happening to me? How come I'm experiencing anxiety? Where is it coming
yeah.
from?
Yeah, those are the thoughts. It's you're ruminating on the past
that's,
stuff and like,
opening. Almost entirely
right.
a exercise in anxiety.
Yeah. Well, I know, right?
Right.
But having this conversation with clients is a different thing because I naturally go there too sometimes.
Right.
It is hard to be on the other side of it because I understand. I can totally empathize with that feeling, that desire to want to understand your feelings
Absolutely.
And why they are the
Absolutely.
Way they are,
yes.
why you are the way you are.
Right.
And a lot of therapies are predicated on that insight, you know, and just knowing why you are the way you are. But I think the moment-to-moment feelings and anxieties, like sometimes we just don't know. And
right.
it's also okay to maybe not know and still breathe into it and open ourselves up to it and accept it for what it is and
yeah.
move on from
yeah.
it too.
There's three distinctions I'd like to make
okay,
when
please
this
do.
Stuff happens.
Please
right?
do. Yes.
It's past, present, and future.
Mm-hmm.
Why am okay. I this way? Yeah. Playing investigator, going back and looking
yeah.
at where this came from historically.
Sure.
Absolutely.
We can if make sense of it.
If it's yeah. hysterical, it's historical. So look at it and understand it. Like
yeah.
all those things.
Sure.
That's past, right?
Uh-huh.
Future is, okay, well, what can I do about this? And how
mm-hmm.
do I change this? And how can I be different?
Mm-hmm.
What are the tools? What do I do?
Yeah.
Yeah. We can
do
that.
We can get there. Yeah.
And that's what we're going to do in the future.
Sure.
You need to do both of those things.
Mm-hmm.
The present is, what are you feeling? What's the sensation in your body? Can you be
mm-hmm.
mindful of where you are?
Right.
Right. That's
just
present.
Being present. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's all okay. three of those things. And as mm-hmm. a therapist, I think you need to know and understand all three of those things in terms of your client, not in terms of you, how they understand past, present, and future when it comes to anxiety.
Okay.
And then knowing that you're going to hit all three, but maybe not in this session, in this moment.
Okay. So it sounds like staying present focused, though, in the moment, if you're talking about their feelings now, you want to stay there. If you're the therapist talking to the client.
If that's where you are for that session, that's what you decide to do in that session, staying there for present. Yes.
Right. Okay. So if somebody, like a listener right now, is listening, like, what do I do when I'm feeling anxious or when I'm feeling an uncomfortable emotion, right? Like, do I tap into the past, present, future stuff?
If you're thinking, what do I do when I feel anxious? That's a present thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, about recognizing, oh, I'm anxious. Let me understand what's happening in my body. Let me understand and orient myself to time and space and place right now, right here.
So mindfulness, presence.
Yeah.
But what about other coping skills, right? Like when there's anxiety? Because I noticed you didn't go there with Sarah, but is there a time where you would be like, okay, let's focus on some tools we can put in the toolbox, right? Like deep breathing.
Absolutely.
Or this or that.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. And we've done this in some versions. Mm-hmm. And I do this with a lot of clients. And there are definitely tricks, and it depends on what they're going to be able to access, right?
Mm.
It can be, you know, one that I love, which is to tell me five things that you see and five things that you hear, right?
Yeah.
And it's involving their senses and bringing them to that mindful place of right here, right now.
Yeah.
You know,
opening up to the present.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
They use that a lot. Yeah.
That's a big tool. Yeah. I mean, they.
Who are they? But everyone, almost every, you know, therapy modality, but ACT, you know, acceptance commitment therapy. Sure. It's a type of CBT. But yeah, it's very, very like
CBT, DBT.
Be aware, open up, and then do what matters. Right?
Right.
Those are kind of the three steps. So when I hear you say like past, present, future, it's kind of in the similar realm there of like, yeah, be aware.
You got to go very much present. Mm-hmm. And it's all about, okay, your anxiety is at a level above your head right now.
Right. Your window of tolerance. You're out of it.
So how do we roll the window down? How do we bring your head above that water, that flood of anxiety, right? And that's very much present. You know, what are some tools? What are some things we can do right now?
Right.
And if they're reaching out to a therapist, they're using one of the best tools in their box.
Right. I know. I often remind clients of that. Like, we are one of your tools. We are part of your support system.
You are a tool.
Thank you so much. You know, I try not to say that about you, but now that we're just saying it.
So for Sarah, for example, driving home from Mexico, she was seeing her sister very much not okay and getting anxious. And she was responding to Sarah's anxiety. And it was sort of like they were both recognizing that. Mm-hmm. And for Sarah, it was really just going, oh, right.
Yeah. Break the tension by just naming it.
Right.
Like, hey, look at us. We're both anxious messes. Woo.
Right.
I love that this this story is really obviously a representation or like a metaphor for Sarah's life, right? Like this is just one little thing that is the microcosm of just Sarah's life of control and anxiety. And
absolutely. And we make reference to the shirt because she literally in this session was saying to her sister, just put it on cruise control and chill.
Mm-hmm.
And the shirt that she has that says, keep calm, Sarah will handle it, right?
Yeah. You have a couple shirts, but that's her shirt.
She has that shirt, right?
Yeah.
And we made a shirt for the podcast that says, relax, nothing's under control.
That's what I was thinking of, but yeah.
And you know, we've talked about it. We talked about the Viking funeral, you know, she can have for the shirt.
Yes.
Because that idea is the opposite of put on cruise control and chill. It's, I need to have control over every single thing in this situation. And that's where she was saying the thing about the extremes of control.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then her saying, oh, so me feeling my feelings or acknowledging I feel anxious, like that makes me feel better. Oh, so I'm self-soothing. Is that selfish?
Right.
And you're like, yeah, it is. In a positive way, actually. You are self-soothing. It is, sure, by definition, selfish. But sometimes we have to be a little selfish. It doesn't mean that you're a selfish person.
Right. Selfish is thinking of yourself, right?
Period. Yeah. Sometimes we have to.
Right. A selfish person is different.
Which obviously Sarah is not. That goes without saying.
No, not at all.
In fact, she veers towards the opposite. So that's why it is so healthy for her to think of herself in a moment like this. And I think in turn, you know, it's going to I think vulnerability like begets vulnerability. Like if someone is going to admit, I feel anxious right now, usually that's met with, you know, especially in a healthy relationship, that's going to be met with, oh my God, so am I, right? Or like something, you know, where
maybe,
you connect.
Maybe.
But I think, is that what she's saying here? Where like I tried to tell her I felt anxious and it still didn't work? Or what do you think went
wrong the first
in her
thing,
eyes?
Right. Yeah. But the first thing was what went right. Like when she realized selfish.
Sure.
She even said to me something that we had used before several times. We brought it back up here, that idea of flying a plane, right?
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
And she said, I was thinking to myself, I put the oxygen mask on me.
Yes. Beautiful.
Awesome. That is great. You need to do that. Mm-hmm. And I think for her in this moment, it was like, well, I don't know if that worked so well.
Yes. Right? I know. She's like, but it didn't work, Doug.
Right.
And I was like, what do you mean? Like maybe work, right? Like I see what you mean. It didn't like eradicate all anxiety, right? Like that's not always the goal though.
Right.
It still was progress.
It was absolutely progress
because
it was recognizing and naming anxiety.
Yeah.
Which she did. And she did it, period. Mm-hmm. It's
period.
Wow. How cool was that? That she was able to see it, feel it, name it, experiencing it, and getting home safely. It still all happened.
Right. I put these little like numbers down because, you know, I struggle with anxiety sometimes and I love getting little like 1, 2, 3, like what to do when you have anxiety, right? Which is why I say like the ACT thing, like, oh, be aware, open up, do what matters.
Sure.
This I heard, at least I extrapolated from what you were saying, like, one, name it to tame it, but I don't like the term tame it, but that's what they say, right? Like name it, like label your feelings, bring awareness to them. Then you do this what if game, right?
Sure.
Yep. The what if game with her, which is really just like perspective taking, like looking at different options of how to look at a situation.
Right.
And then note how it feels to notice everything that's bad versus everything when you look at it
that.
In a good way. I love that little exercise, which is very CBT, but without calling it what it is, like in your ninja way of just, hey, let's just do a little exercise. Do me a favor and tell me like, point out everything that sucks in your view right now, right?
Well, everything, I mean, for her, yes, but it was everything that's out of place.
That's out of place, yes.
Right? And part of that is a throwback to earlier in the session when we were talking about having cleaners in the house.
Right.
And they don't do it right.
Yeah, you have to rearrange when they leave.
Right. Like, oh God, they did everything wrong. So then it's kind of looking at that perspective of it's not everything that's wrong in the room, which is probably, I mean, if you notice when I said that to her, like, boom.
Oh, it worked. Instantly.
She's like, oh, this.
Oh, she was like, okay, I got you, Doug. She was like, this. But then you also said, okay, flip it. Like, name all the things that are actually pretty good right now.
Robot
she was also
vacuum.
Very quick. Yeah. I have that and I have this and I have screens and blah, blah, blah. Like, she was actually the act of gratitude or whatever that exercise was, you know, is a combination of things. It was very effective. And
totally.
Yeah. It's just a lesson in perspective taking, right? And I think some people might look at that and be like, ugh, but CBT, like toxic positivity, like we're just changing our thought, like perception is not reality, like blah, blah, blah. But really in this case, it is, we can look at things a little differently because we do tend to have a negativity bias. We see things horribly, and especially with Sarah and her context. Yeah, it's all going to be flooding you when you're seeing things out of order, out of control.
And we think it impacts us greatly.
Yeah,
and
all the little things.
And greater than anything else. I would argue that that's because we're completely, often, blind to the things that are great, right?
It's easy to
It's just very unconscious. And as soon as I did the thing about what are three things wrong, boom, here.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're, you know, very impactful.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what about three things great? Without hesitation. Well, that robot vacuum is awesome. I love that I have it. Great,
but it's there.
We don't get flooded with those things, right? If you read Yelp reviews for places, they're probably all negative,
right? Yeah, people are more inclined to.
You generally
leave a bad
see
review.
1 stars and 5 stars. You don't really see 3 stars.
Yeah.
People don't just go, "Yeah, it was cool." And you know, a note for all you listeners out there: if you do want to rate the podcast, don't give us a 3. Give us a 5.
Give us a 1. Tell us you hate us.
Kenzie wants the negative reviews so badly.
I just do. I just need to rip the Band-Aid off. Just tell me everything you hate about me, people. There has to be something.
I will as soon as we stop recording.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
Somebody has to.
But I think you're right. It is the perspective shift. And for Sarah, it was, you can flood yourself with these things too. Mm-hmm. It's all there. And how does that feel?
Right. Oh, that feels better. It actually feels a little lighter. I'm at ease. I feel grateful. Oh, cool. At least I didn't have to drive home.
Yeah. From Mexico. And this was not toxic positivity. This was
saying it's realistic.
Positive and negative are there all the time. Which one do you want to focus on? Which one is going to impact you more? And can we just acknowledge it's both?
It's both. It's just fact checking. It's reality testing, whatever you want to call it. The facts are the facts. Those things are all there. Okay. How are we going to look at it?
Right. That's the withdrew. He loved us. I think I did this with Sarah too. The red car, white car example. Red and white exist at the same time.
Yeah, but
whatever you're looking for is going to be what you see. There's something you don't like about this.
Well, okay. It's veering into a little bit of the law of attraction, which I do not like. You know, people think you can manifest things, or if you have a positive outlook on life, good things will happen to you. And in a way, yeah, because you could reframe situations
Absolutely.
If you have a positive outlook to say, this was not a bad thing that happened to me. In fact, I learned something from it. Like, sure.
Right.
But sometimes there are maybe not objectively bad things happening, but, you know, sometimes bad things happen and maybe you tried to manifest a good thing and still a bad thing happened. Like, I just think a lot of stuff is also coincidence and just random. And
what
absurd.
I'm saying in this, especially this example of red car, white car, is they are both on the road at the same time.
No, that is true. Right? Yes, of course.
And whatever your bias is, whatever you're looking for, you're going to find confirmation bias.
Right. So bringing some awareness to that, because a lot of the time the bias is implicit and we don't know.
Right.
It's unconscious.
And what are the things wrong in this picture? Mm-hmm. And Sarah was like, oh, this is that. Yeah. Okay. What are the things right?
Right.
Oh, this. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying have one perspective and not the other. I'm saying recognize both things are always true.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a matter of perspective. Which one do you want to pay more attention to or be more affected by?
Which one feels better? Yeah. When we're connecting it back to feelings, it's also like, ooh, how does your body feel? And how do your thoughts and your feelings change when you do focus on something that feels better or feels more positive?
And again, this brings me back to when you and I were talking about the difference between life and living. Right?
And
we were saying the same thing, just using the words differently, right? Life is amazing. Just this thing that is what we get to experience, how it is, all the things that happen our way, the living
part.
Right,
the living, which you could flip very easily. It's just semantics, but
it's very difficult. Like all these challenges and all these things and all these pressures and money and stress and traffic and time.
So we could focus on all those bad things that we have to do all the time. Or we could be like, dang, I get to wake up every day and I get to live life and I get to drive a car and I get to see the grass and the trees.
And I would say it's an and, not an or there, right? And we can focus, if you go, or we can focus on this, that's almost like saying,
that's
I'm going to focus on this and not that.
Yeah, because that's not possible.
No, it's also almost impossible to focus on both at the same time. If we just recognize that, oh, I'm focused on one, but both exist. Mm-hmm. Okay, then there's balance.
That's the awareness part. Yeah, the mindfulness, the presence. Oh, okay. Looking at your thoughts from the observer lens, right?
Yeah.
In ACT, I think they say this cool thing, look at your thoughts, not from your thoughts, which is a cool kind of observing
mind thing. The idea of humans often try to make meaning for things happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that there's a meaning for things happening, but we can make meaning out of things that happen.
Well, and that's existentialism too, right? Because life is inherently meaningless. And so we have to put some meaning on it that feels right for us. And on that note.
On that note, you don't have to wait for Godot, but you do have to wait for us for another week. Unless you've got a bunch lined up. And you're going
to
binge.
Yeah.
So binge us. Rate us. Review us. And know that we will be back for you, with you, here next week.
See you then.
Bye.
Bye-bye.